Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Then welcome to episode 4. Your grandmother's name was Carrie. Good to know. Thank you. Okay, so just as a reminder once again, I don't monitor the screen while I talk because I'm not very good at it. So I'll stop a couple of times during, and then we'll also try and leave a little bit of time at the end if you have questions or comments. So I ran out of time last time when we were discussing how it's possible to rise or descend in frequency according to the moment-by-moment contents of our own mind. And I wanted to give you a little example to illustrate what happens with both the rise in frequency and the descent in frequency. I wanted to give you an example from my own experience. Because I know I've been going on and on about the importance of vibratory frequency for a few weeks now, because I'm a big fan. But hopefully this example from my own life will help illustrate why it's good to understand how the whole frequency thing operates. Because I didn't know anything about vibratory frequency myself at the time that this thing occurred, but I definitely noticed it while it was happening, the rise and the fall. I just didn't know why. So I was going through this intensely challenging period about 3 years ago, and everything I believed myself to be had, like, suddenly been just ripped from its moorings. And the whole process was something that I found incredibly painful. So I was spending hours and hours every day and night in intense prayer, just doing every form of release and surrender that I could think of, any kind of forgiveness, anything to alleviate the pain, even for brief periods. And during that period of time, one night I had this really profound dream, if you can call it that, in which I awakened spiritually. It was more than a dream. It was kind of an incredibly clear vision experience that also had physical effects in it. But because it occurred while I was sleeping, that's the only language I can give it, so I'm going to call it a dream. Anyway, in the dream, I was in a place, this dusty sort of antique room with these intensely heavily carved Chinese rosewood screens, and I recognized that this was the Forbidden City. So I was inside this building, inside the Forbidden City compound, and I was hunting for my baggage. And I couldn't find the suitcases that I brought with me, but I spent this really long time looking for them before I finally gave up and opened up these huge, really, really tall, ornate double doors, and they opened out onto a courtyard, like a plain concrete courtyard. So I walked out there feeling kind of weirdly naked because I didn't have my baggage with me. And the lighting, the sky was really white. You know when it's really harsh light outside and the colors are really vivid and you kind of have to squint? So I'm outside there squinting and looking around. And there were five or six monks standing around, maybe, I don't know, 50 yards away, just standing there. And one of them turned to face me. And it was Thich Nhat Hanh. And in real life, I don't really know anything about the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, so I don't have any kind of prior connection. But I knew that this was definitely him. So anyway, he turned to look at me, and this kind of shuddering bolt of electrical energy, like this powerful awakening energy, came in a straight line from his eyes to mine. And I felt it enter my brain, and I started to kind of fall over sideways and lose my balance and my equilibrium. And I realized that if I didn't reach out a hand to break my fall, that my head was probably going to smash open on the concrete like a pumpkin. But I was in such existential pain at the time period where this dream occurred, that it kind of bled into the dream or into the vision or whatever you want to call it. And so I chose not to put out a hand to break my fall because I somehow knew that to play it safe and break my fall would be to choose to stop short of enlightenment. like, you know, to try and save my old way of being instead of letting go. So I decided to just give in and go with it completely because I kind of felt like I had nothing to lose. I wanted to awaken from this painful illusion no matter what, even if it smashed my head into a million pieces. And I woke up, I mean, like, you know, physically in my normal 3D bedroom, just before my head smashed on the concrete. But here's what's interesting. I woke up then in the night in my bed into complete silence, meaning no ego chatter, no emotional pain, nothing, just amazing peace and great spaciousness. And, oh, my God, what a relief that was. But the interesting thing about this was I clearly felt the peace and the spaciousness, and those things continued on as I went about my day, you know, after I got up. And apparently I really had awakened in some way because, you know, to use the department store analogy from last time, I actually did shoot straight up in the elevator all the way to the rooftop terrace, and I was enjoying that spacious 360-degree view. But I could also feel on some more buried level this very fierce resistance going on someplace, like way deep down beneath my conscious awareness. Because on some level, I didn't really want to leave my ego pain behind. And this was actually outpictured for me in my 3D world in this really extraordinary way. And that is why I became so aware of the conflict that was raging on some level within as well as outside in my 3D world. And it was because I was in this extraordinary high-frequency state that I knew very effortlessly that the external outpicturing of conflict in my environment was the same identical thing as the internal conflict I was having. I just knew that outside was the same thing as inside. And that kind of effortless recognition of what's true is a natural part of being in high frequency. It's one of the items found on that high floor of the department store, you know, to use last week's analogy again. And I recognized that it was actually emanating from me and that the external was only acting as a mirror of my internal state. And, you know, we often talk about these ideas intellectually, but in that vibratory frequency that I found myself in on that day, these were not intellectual ideas. They were just like very obvious knowings. So anyway, I decided to drive down and take a little walk by the beach. And this was maybe, I don't know, late August, early September, and I was in Southern California. And it was a normal, hot, sunny day when I started out. And when I got there, suddenly, just only right where I was, the beach was suddenly just absolutely freezing, like maybe 30, 35 degrees outside. And I was sleepless, right, because it's Southern California. And there was this high wind that came up out of no place, and the sand was flying at this incredible velocity to the degree that it was like being inside, what do you call it, like one of the sandblasting booths. And that's when I noticed that it was all an outpicturing of what was going on someplace inside me. And the sand, it stung my face and my ears were frozen and they were being battered by like all this sandblasting and they were aching really painfully. And this is kind of a weird, interesting little thing. There was no pain. Like, I mean, it hurt, you know, it hurt a lot physically, but there was no pain, which was a really odd sensation. And I've heard people like, you know, Jeff Foster or Ken Wilber speaking of pain in that kind of a manner, but that is the first and only time that I've ever experienced anything like that myself. So that's just a little fun aside there. But anyway, so the sand was whipping around, and the sky was blacker than I have ever seen it anywhere. The clouds were like charcoal gray, and by that I mean like an actual piece of charcoal, you know, that's, it's almost pure black. And that's how the entire sky was, but only out over the ocean exactly in front of where I was standing. It was blue and tranquil and normal everywhere else. So below that black sky, the water was the most amazingly strange color of just pure, bright, vivid emerald green. Like really eerie, but really beautiful. But, you know, the Pacific Ocean is never a color anything like that, ever. And so here it was, this incredible green, and it was all whipped up, like really angry, really frenzied, with great big white caps all over the place on top of it. And I was just sort of standing back, just admiring how crazy and beautiful it all was, all black and white and brilliant green, even though I could feel the rage and the resistance coming from someplace within it, and I clearly recognized them as my own. It was all the same one thing, me and the ocean environment. And then all of this was simultaneously happening within great peace and spaciousness. It was like the weirdest combination or juxtaposition. And so I was walking along the marina, and all the boats that were moored there were rocking and bumping back and forth like crazy. And they all had metal masts, and the metal lines coming from those masts, they were just singing and shrieking in this weird ear-splitting way. And, you know, and I was just really, really peaceful within the whole thing, just kind of watching and listening. But then the next morning, and this is totally down to my own beliefs at the time, I was feeling like this inner aspect of myself that was so secretly angry and resistant, like it was starting to come to the surface and gain a little bit of headway. And I didn't want it to, but I felt like it was coming anyway, like I had no choice, you know. And the peace, the spaciousness, was still really strong at this point. But I believed equally strongly in the power of that resistant part of the self. And I felt kind of helpless against it. I believed it had more power than I did. So over the next couple of days, I could feel, and I didn't have the language or the understanding to describe it this way at the time, but I could clearly feel my vibratory state just starting to sink a little bit, you know. And the peace was still here, but it was maybe a little bit less pervasive. And there just didn't seem to be anything I could do about that. And then on the fourth day, I woke up in the morning, and it was still, you know, mostly peaceful and mostly spacious. But I had a bunch of things to do that day, like, a bunch of things I had to accomplish before leaving town that evening. And so I was a little bit stressed, you know, peacefully stressed, but stressed, because I wasn't sure that I could get it all done in time. So I'm driving around doing my errands, and to my total surprise, the stress kind of, something sort of tipped, the balance tipped, and the stress took over just a little bit. And as it did, the peace kind of evaporated, and the dark thoughts and the terrible pain that went with them started right away to resurface again, like immediately. And I could feel very clearly, I knew that this was because I had begun to feel slightly stressed. And I could feel a definite connection there, even though I didn't understand it. And, you know, doesn't that seem weird? It seems surprising that those two things could be connected, slight stress and a portal to hell. It was like, even though the stress seems like a very innocent sort of feeling to have, but somehow the negativity or the lower vibratory belief that lies at the base of the stress, you know, the belief that whatever it is, that I'm lacking time or I don't have enough control over my environment, whatever it is, that this lower form of subtle negative belief was enough to open up a portal through which all of those lower feelings and thoughts and beliefs could come flooding back in. And they did, you know, of course they did, because I was re-entering the vibratory arena in which all those feelings could exist within me once again, to exist consciously within me. clearly they'd been jostling around in there all along, but they were prevented from having their conscious expression by the high vibratory state that I'd been in for the past 4 days. And on some level, I obviously was not truly finished with wanting to feel all those things. So they just needed a tiny little opening, like a slightly stressful schedule, and a small spiral down into slightly lower vibratory beingness, and, you know, voila, here they all are again, like they never left. And, you know, so I did quite a lot of praying and surrendering and releasing while I drove around doing my errands, and that did help, but not enough to reclaim that very high, spaciously peaceful level of frequency that I was in before that. And so the quote-unquote egoless awakened state that I had seemingly experienced for several days, it went away as the state of my frequency dropped into its previous resting state. Or maybe it was, you know, I don't know. Maybe it was a little higher than its previous resting state, but not nearly high enough to retain that spacious recognition of peace. And, you know, it's sort of interesting to speculate. Had I known then what I know now about how frequency actually works and about how I can work consciously with it, might I have been able to choose a slightly different trajectory there? You know, who knows? But, you know, I can choose differently now, and that's something that I'm seriously grateful for. Anyway, so you see, my point in telling you that story is that all of these states, all of these forms and aspects of liberation and recognition of oneness and peace and on and on and on, they're all available, they exist, and they're waiting for you all of the time, depending on the frequency that you happen to embody at that moment. And your choice to rise or fall in frequency, your choice to stay spacious or return to a more familiar, more constricted way of being, is also largely in your own hands. It's not some big mystical thing, you know, some hugely mysterious process that's entirely out of your hands. Well, actually, I take it back. It is very big, and it's very, very mystical. And the timing of all these things is certainly out of your hands. But, you know, you can see, hopefully, the more we talk about it, how the choices that you make and the care that you take in the nurturing of your own energy field, your own vibratory frequency, you can see how much depends upon this. Because, you know, it's your happiness and your peace and many other things. Because you are a divine creator. You're the co-creator of your own existence and your own experience of life. And that includes your own state of beingness. So, you know, that's why I'm such a big fan of being active and not passive when it comes to the moment-by-moment choosing of my thoughts and feelings and perceptions and beliefs, because everything rides on it. So that's my big story from last week. I see that, questions, comments. I didn't realize that awakening is not complete. Ego comes back and forth. Oh, you know, I don't even like to use the word awakening because I have no idea what it means personally. I've had 6 or 7 of this kind of experience, and I call them openings because who knows what they actually are. Okay, moving on. Just to recap, last time, you know, we talked a lot about frequency levels and about all the various things and experiences that are found on those different levels, like, you know, the knowings, the kinds of beliefs that are bundled together, so to speak, on each level. But now, excuse me, I need some water. Before we move on, I actually want to backtrack for a little bit, because now that we've talked in a little bit of depth about how the levels of frequency work, I want to go back to a topic from our very first week when we talked about some of the key prerequisites that are necessary for taking your accelerated spiritual journey into your own hands. Because The very first key prerequisite, if you remember, is to choose to believe in what you intellectually know, in the sense that you already know you're supported, you know you're loved, and you know you're worthy of all goodness just exactly as you are right now. You know that intellectually, generally speaking, you know. So we're going to return to that because it's so important to clear out any muddy, mixed up, conflicting beliefs that might coexist simultaneously in our minds about these things. Because we need to know what we know all the way down in an unconflicted way. Because really, seriously, you can't hope to know yourself as being one with all that is if you have any kind of doubts at all that you deserve to be part of divinity. Or if you aren't completely sure that your divine source is trustworthy, which would mean you therefore can't afford to let your guard down and feel safe in its embrace. Because, you know, who knows what ugly tricks it might have up its sleeve if you dared to put all your trust in it, right? So it's better to keep your guard up a little bit so that you won't be victimized by a capricious God. So you obviously are not going to be able to recognize yourself as limitless and free if you're still clinging in any way to the idea that you could be a victim of anything, let alone a victim of God. The condition of knowing yourself as being one with your source automatically guarantees that you're not afraid of anything, because freedom from fear means you recognize that there's nothing but you and God as one. And implicit in that recognition is that you and God, joined in perfect holiness, are entirely, completely trustworthy. And, of course, that you are infinitely loved and supported as a result. There is not the slightest question of potential backstabbing going on here. And, you know, this is a knowing that ought to be considered a no-brainer. Because if God is composed entirely of love, and if you are a divine chip off the old block, and, you know, this is what many spiritual teachings say, right? If you're innocent and made entirely of love, just like your creator, then why the hell would you not be supported? Why wouldn't you be loved? And why wouldn't you yourself be worthy of all good things exactly as you are right now? But, you know, is this not just one of the hardest things to believe about your own life? There's the firm belief that you have to work hard in order to be worthy. And you absolutely have to keep control over your own life at all times. You have to strategize and micromanage, because who will look after your needs if you don't? You don't dare surrender your survival needs to your creator, because who knows what would happen? You'd be like homeless in no time, right? Because God will probably be looking the other way, like reading the funny papers or something, when your mortgage comes due. Even if you no longer believe in a vengeful God, you're probably believing in a sort of fuzzy, preoccupied God who does not consider you a priority in any way, because you're not really worthy of high priority care of attention. So that kind of fuzzy, good-natured, but haphazard inattention at crucial moments when you feel like you need the support the most, as if God was, I don't know, like a charming but unreliable alcoholic uncle. That seems like a very realistic thing to guard against, right? It would only be normal. So you harbor two conflicting beliefs about the same thing. Each one is all wrapped up in its own little package, and the inconsistencies between them are never exposed to the light of day. So, you know, I mean, that's just one example. But across the board, as a species, we just feel deep distrust at the very idea that we could possibly be supported or let alone worthy of goodness. And so we have to constantly keep a watchful eye over every aspect of our own lives because we just don't dare to trust. And if you scratch the surface, you don't have to go very far down to discover that the reason we don't trust in the goodness and the love of our Creator towards us is because we really don't believe we deserve it. And we really don't see or recognize just how ridiculously, completely, entirely supported we actually are. So there's a leap of trust, a leap of faith that needs to be taken in terms of choosing to believe in your own lovability and in your own worthiness. But right now, for a second, I want to talk in more detail about how ridiculously supported you are, how supported every single person is. Because it isn't, at least I find, it isn't such a huge leap of faith anymore once you recognize how supported you are, because the facts kind of speak for themselves. And so even if you don't yet quite believe in the fact that you are loved and cherished exactly as you are right now, you can remind yourself of the clear structural facts regarding how insanely supported you are. And you can teach yourself relatively easily to believe in this one aspect of the truth about yourself and about your Creator. Okay, so you are an aspect of the Creator, and you are currently experiencing yourself in form, okay? So let's just take a look at that form for one moment. There is a constant intelligence operating within your physical structure and also within your energy field, but let's just focus on the physical body for a minute. So each of your trillions upon trillions of cells magically knows what to do to sustain life. You, meaning the conscious mind you don't have anything to do with it. It's all done for you by the higher self. Your heart gets pumped for you. Your breath occurs, whether you're thinking about it or not. Your food is digested and nutrients are taken from it entirely without your conscious participation. And when you fall asleep at night, your body enters a sort of semi-paralysis state so that when you dream, which feels every bit as real to you while you're in it as your waking life does, right? So if you're running in a dream, you might assume that the physical body would act out everything you're experiencing while dreaming every time you dream. But no, generally speaking, your body is kept from making too many drastic movements so that you don't fall out of bed or accidentally punch your partner in the eye or something. All of this is taken care of. It's all regulated on your behalf by the higher aspect of you, the higher intelligence. And really, these are just a few of the examples of the ways in which your physical body is supported and taken care of for you. There are probably millions more, but, you know, you get the idea. So now let's look at the non-physical for a moment. You received the mind-boggling gift of being created. Did you have to earn that gift? No. How could you possibly earn it? You weren't here before you were here. Creation was just bestowed upon you, no questions asked. And once you've been created, you cannot ever be uncreated. You, the non-physical divine essence of you, is eternal. So you are a frickin' miracle, in other words. You cannot be harmed, you cannot be stained, you can't be degraded in any way. You're perfect, you're cherished, you're loved, you're 100% safe, and completely approved of by your Creator. And there's absolutely nothing you have to do to earn any of that, or to keep on earning it or deserving it. It's like it's a forever thing. And part of your eternal identity is that you are a Creator, just like the one that created you. You have complete free will in what you choose to create. You are given the most miraculously complex and fascinating mechanisms by which to create and experience all of the infinite choices at your disposal. You know, it ain't easy to create convincing simulations of separate people living in a separate world, having a crazy variety of separate possible experiences, when the raw material that you're working with is eternal, indivisible love and oneness. And yet that's what you have at your disposal. That's the only thing you have at your disposal. So all of that doesn't just accidentally happen. These incredibly convincing simulations have been lovingly set up for you. Infinite potential choices are laid out before you like the most amazingly complex virtual reality game. and you get to choose what to think, what to believe, how to act, and what kind of experiences you want to have, all within the simulation of your choice. Your higher self, and everybody who has ever lived has their own higher self, your own higher self is with you constantly. It's loving you. It's feeding you information, should you choose to accept it, about the perfect divine being that you are in truth. Because that is the nature of the game. You come in blindfolded, you get spun around 3 times, and then try to remember your way back into heaven or back into the recognition that you yourself are heaven. You're always getting this info fed to you of who and what you are in truth. It's being supplied constantly from birth onward, and it's you who is making the choices moment by moment on whether to let any of that pristine information sink in. So your higher self is also in charge of all of that, physically and non-physically. It's in charge of creating the moment-by-moment simulation of your 3D world according to the co-creative choices that you yourself are always making. Same thing as saying the vibratory choices that you're always making. And left to its own devices, your higher self would create heaven on earth for you to experience. It already knows who and what you are, and it knows you're worthy of all goodness. It knows you're composed entirely of love, just like the one that created you. So it knows that you deserve total perfection. But because you are so loved, because you're so supported in your right to choose whatever you want to experience, your higher self creates the world that you expect to see. It creates the magnetic experiences that you choose to draw to yourself based on your thoughts and your attitudes and your beliefs and your general electromagnetic vibratory state. And you have a certain amount of freedom and power in terms of your co-creative abilities. But it's really about making the choice to manage your frequency, meaning that you're choosing to train your mind to think only thoughts and believe only beliefs that help you stay in higher frequency. This is where you exercise more and more control over your own experience of life. So maybe if you're anything like me, you've gone through life with the sense or the belief that you were not particularly supported by life, by circumstance, whatever. That's the historical belief based on past experiences. And so you don't tend to expect going forward to find an automatic wealth of support from anyone or anything. So you're seeing the future through a persistent lens of past belief, which draws to you the same sorts of experiences over and over again, all of which confirm what you already think you know. I am not supported by life. And clearly, you know, not everybody in the world feels this way about being unsupported by life. But, you know, some of us do. Many, many of us do. And for a lot of us, this is a very familiar aspect of life, this sense of being not as supported as we would like to be. So this is an area where if you catch yourself believing that you're not going to be supported, or if you're not currently being supported in some way, it's an opportunity to stop yourself and recognize that this is a habitual pattern of belief for you. And that's all it is. Nothing more. Just a habit of believing something. It isn't the truth of anything. It's just what you've always chosen to believe. And so then you choose, because it's always a conscious choice, you choose to remember that your cells and your organs and your heart and your lungs are all functioning to keep you alive totally without your help, and that your body is only the smallest fraction of the magnificent consciousness that masquerades as you, and that your eternal existence is a miracle that you did absolutely nothing to earn, nor do you need to do anything now to keep on deserving it. And if you choose to, you can feel grateful. I mean, like really, really grateful about how your existence is set up in these incredibly vast and complex ways, just so that you can have the seamless experience of deciding how to perceive and experience your life. Because you know what? Just the action of feeling grateful in the recognition of how supported you really are and how loved and cared for you really are by your own higher self, this alone will automatically bring you up into higher frequency. And in that higher frequency, maybe you just might be able to look around and notice that it's been you all along who has chosen to put all of this physical and non-physical support that you receive, put it to use by choosing to experience scenario after scenario in which you felt unsupported. Because you, divine being that you are, you show up on Earth in a body with a vast universe that is geared solely for the purpose of allowing you to have the illusion of any kind of experience that you want. And the way you choose to use it, all of that infinite, mind-boggling, vast, complex, seamless support, is to prove to yourself through illusory experiences of how unsupported you are. Because that's the experience you want to have. You're choosing to know yourself as unsupported. And your higher self, meanwhile, would absolutely love for you to know yourself as being 1,000% supported in every way. But it loves you so much and is so committed to supporting you in helping you experience all the things that you choose for yourself that it takes your lead and it creates for you the scenarios and the relationships and the physical circumstances that confirm your choices over and over to know yourself as unsupported and unloved. So, you know, it's pretty nuts, wouldn't you agree? We're just such a fun and fascinating species. But, you know, anyway, I personally have found it extremely helpful to keep these things in mind in terms of being able to turn it around and reframe my thinking when it comes to the idea of whether or not I'm supported in this universe. And I really have come to realize the staggering amount of support that I actually do have. And honestly, it's way more support than I can even conceive of. I know this. But I do try my best to wrap my mind around it as much as I can. And since I've been doing that, that recognition has been the springboard that's allowed a lot of other kind of related recognitions to drop into place, which we'll talk about in a minute, but I'll stop here and see if there's any discussion. Sometimes I think this life is just to learn what we are not, and as we travel through the maze of learning. Sorry, I'm just reading here. It doesn't look like there's anything that requires, unless you die and you're evil. Yeah, it doesn't look like there's any specific questions here, so I think we're fairly safe to move on to the rest here. Okay. Can there be a higher or lower self? Can there be a self for that matter? Don't ask me. I guess I use these terms because they relate to my own experience. The conscious mind, I sort of think of as the one in the middle, the lower being, the more unconscious, and the higher. I stopped using the term Holy Spirit quite a long time ago and began using Holy Self. And I don't know that it's exactly the same, well, I know that it isn't, as the way the Holy Spirit is spoken of in A Course in Miracles, but there is definitely a higher, far vaster, far wiser aspect of this overall consciousness. So I don't know if that particularly answers that one, but don't ask me, I guess, would be the short form of my answer. So anyway, so I want to get back to the other portion of the idea of believing in what we already intellectually know, but really believing it deeply. So the other part of this, the idea that I'm not worthy or not worthy of support or not worthy of love, these are all the related ideas that seemed to kind of fall like dominoes for me, in part because I chose to recognize just how supported and loved I really am. Recognition of how I'm supported seemed to kind of act as a gateway into all these other forms of trust in my own worthiness, and trust ultimately in my own profound safety in God. And I can relax deeply in this knowing in a way that I personally never felt able to before. So I feel it's really important to open up and examine these questions of, am I worthy of divine love and support? Because if you don't truly believe you're worthy of these things, if you examine it closely, this is nothing but crazy, disordered thinking. It's the kind of thinking, frankly, that can only exist in a relatively low frequency level. Because when you think about it clearly, you can't help but see the supreme arrogance of the thought that I'm not worthy. And, you know, of course, it doesn't feel like arrogance. It feels like the opposite, like a sort of Looney Tunes kind of humility. But in reality, it's a totally absurd, breathtakingly arrogant idea. Because, you know, think about it. Your source is made entirely out of love. That's the raw material that it's made from. If it was going to respond to you, hypothetically, it could only do so with love. Love is the only tool in its toolkit. It's the only arrow in its quiver. Love is its only identity, you know? You can take it or leave it, except you can't actually leave it. Love is what God is, and love is what you are, period. So how crazy is it, then, to insist that your creator, your source, would somehow be able, let alone motivated, to make an exception just for you? Terrible, awful, incredibly special you. You know, then it's a ridiculous idea, don't you think? Like, as if you are made of something other than all that is. As if infinity itself, which I'm sorry, it encompasses everything, that's why it's infinite, as if it has a special little secret tunnel leading outside of itself, just so that I, the unacceptable other, can suffer away in my own precious little stinky cave, all alone and unsupported and set apart from all the rest of all that is. You know, and I'm not making light of this. I know how hard it is to clear out all of these kinds of crazy beliefs. But I can tell you from my own experience that they have to go. Trust and faith are things that have to be sincerely cultivated, and I can't stress that enough, just how important they are. Because there are definite vibratory consequences to placing half-assed belief, or, you know, the kind of belief that's mostly just lip service, in these crucially important statements of truth. You have to be able to feel them in a very pure and unconflicted kind of way. You have to be able to live them in a way that feels true for you. And when you can manage to do that, your trip upward through the vibratory levels can probably go pretty quickly, you know? And it can be really an exhilarating ride. And even the inevitable ups and downs can be really fascinating and illuminating all in themselves. But you have to get quite good at noticing whether you have muddy, mixed up ideas surrounding a single statement of truth, like I am worthy, that are all coexisting at the same time. Because that is the kiss of death, having conflicting beliefs about the same issue. with all the differing beliefs coexisting comfortably side by side, but not open to examination to see if they make sense together. Like, I don't know, like saying, my spiritual practice says I'm the perfect son of God, no matter what I seem to do or be in this world, and I totally believe that. And that's great, right? But, you know, and also, I believe, you know, I remember that time that I stole $2 worth of Kit Kat bars from that nice lady who ran the corner candy store. And she was always so nice to me, and this is how I paid her back. God, what is wrong with me? So, you know, it's just a random example, but there are two opposite beliefs about your worth or your innocence, and they're secretly coexisting side by side, but neither one is opened up to the daylight. So they're just kind of festering away and canceling each other out. So if you catch yourself partially believing in that statement of truth, the one that says that you're innocent and worthy, but then a portion of yourself is dragging its heels and saying, no way, then there is some serious inquiry and some real exploration that's begging to be done. But before you do that, before you go and inquire within, my advice would be to take yourself up into high frequency, or as high as you're able to manage as that, at that particular time, and you call on the wisdom of your higher self. And that higher self wisdom will be much more accessible to you, because now you're in a high enough frequency where guidance can be much more easily heard, right? That is one of the aspects, one of the sort of products that you can find on the higher floors of the department store, is that you can much more easily hear divine wisdom and guidance. And so here you start paying attention. You make an exploratory statement like, I am worthy, if that's the concept you're working with at this particular moment. And really, I recommend this highly as a very useful exercise. You make that statement that I am worthy, and then you pay very close attention to any objections to that statement that are coming from any part of your mind, or any part of your body for that matter, because sometimes the objections can come as a constriction in the gut or involuntary jerking of leg muscles or whatever. You know, you'll know it when you feel it. So you shine a light on each one of the objections one by one. You bring the objection up into the daylight. And just like we talked about the last time when we talked about releasing the big sticky beliefs, the ones that seem too complex and too stuck to ever be able to release them, you remember that? When you look at them in higher frequency, that there's suddenly spaciousness all the way around the belief, and you're able to walk all the way around it and examine it from all sides. And you are able to see very clearly, precisely because you're in higher frequency as you're looking at the belief. So you're able to take advantage of the sanity and clarity and the ability to recognize what's actually true, all of which are hallmarks of the higher frequency that you're in at that moment. So when you're in that higher frequency, you'll also authentically recognize that you really do, in fact, have the power of choice in whether to hang on to a belief that no longer serves you or whether to just let it go right there and then. And you'll recognize that it has no power over you except for the power you give it. So if you've detangled all the muddy, conflicting parts of it and you have no secret lingering ideas about how this misaligned belief still serves your needs in some way, then you can decide to let it go, and it will go, because you're withdrawing your belief in its power over you. And without your belief in its power, it doesn't have any, so it just slips away. So this is the same process that you would use in this exercise, as you're identifying and focusing your attention, on the secret or not so secret objections that your mind is coming up with when you make a statement like, I am worthy. It's the same exact process. So bringing these things up into consciousness and exposing them to the gentle daylight of clarity and sanity, there's actually nothing you have to do except agree to let them be brought to daylight. There's really no need to fix anything, and you're definitely not here to argue with the belief in your unworthiness. Because, you know what? There is no arguing with it. Arguing belongs to the lower frequency level where that belief was first created. And down at that level, the belief is way more certain of its own position than you are of yours. It's way stronger on its home turf than you are. Because you cannot win ever by fighting against a belief or by waging war on it. So instead, you just place your attention on it, like you're curious to see what it is, to see what it's made of. And that's all you need to do. And then from this spacious place, you're free to choose whether or not this old belief or, this old objection, whether it still has value for you. And I really can't overstate just how important it is and how valuable it is to expose those shadowy beliefs to the clear light of higher frequency. Because great sanity and incredible healing, I think, are introduced to these areas of the mind, whether this shows up as immediate recognizable results or not. And, I can't point to anything and prove it. It's just my gut knowing about that. And because all minds are joined in truth, this kind of high-frequency inquiry and illumination is surely doing untold good for humanity as a whole. I just strongly sense that. So your work in higher frequency helps to liberate you, of course, but I'm pretty sure that it simultaneously offers a leg up in ways that you'll never even know about to others all over the world. So let's see, are there any final words of wisdom here or questions or comments? Let's see, new message. Yeah, it looks like don't argue and don't agree either. Well, thank you very much. I think I'm done a few minutes early, and I will say it has been a pleasure, and that's all. And I'll see you next time. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Carrie, thank you so much.